Halloween night was always a bit too much for me, not because of the holiday itself, but the constant doorbell ringing and the throngs of children demanding candy. My 5-year-old, Abby, loved it, of course. She'd been buzzing around in her little princess costume since this afternoon, her plastic pumpkin pail swinging on her arm. I, on the other hand, was 8 months pregnant, exhausted, and could barely keep up with her. My feet ached from standing at the door, holding out candy to kids who never seemed to stop coming. By 10 p.m., I'd finally put Abby to bed, her pail of candy tucked under her arm like a teddy bear. I'd hoped the constant stream of trick-or-treaters would stop, but they didn't. Not until nearly midnight did the doorbell finally stop ringing. The streets outside were silent now, only a few faint laughs and the occasional car in the distance. I sat down in the living room, candy bowl in my lap, absently munching on the leftovers. Pregnancy cravings had a way of justifying late-night candy binges. I turned on a horror movie, something cheesy and predictable, hoping to relax after the long night. About 15 minutes in, just as I was starting to unwind, there was a knock at the door. I froze, staring at the screen as though the knock had come from inside the movie. Who the hell would be trick-or-treating at this hour? My heart gave a small, reluctant thud as I stood up, shuffling to the door. Through the peephole, I saw him, a man dressed in a werewolf mask, standing silently on the porch.
Seriously?
I muttered to myself, opening the door just a crack, enough to glare at him.
Trick or treat?
His voice was low, almost mocking. I squinted at him. My patience was worn thin.
Go home, or I'll call the police. Stupid pranksters.
He didn't move, didn't say anything else, just stood there, staring at me through the cheap plastic mask. I felt a flicker of unease in my gut. There was something wrong about the way he just stood there, the way he watched me.
Go away!
I snapped, louder now, and slammed the door shut. I waited, listening for his footsteps. Nothing. After a few more seconds of silence, I double-locked the door, flicked off the porch light, and told myself to forget about it. But sleep didn't come easy that night. I tossed and turned. Abby's soft snores from the next room were the only sound in the house. I kept waking up as my mind kept flashing back to the masked man. Who was he? Why was he here? I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. It was around 2 a.m. when I woke with a jolt. My heart pounded as though I'd been running for hours. I couldn't place why. There was no noise, no reason for the sudden feeling of dread that gripped my chest like a vice. I slid out of bed quietly and moved toward the door. Maybe it was just a mother's instinct. Maybe I just needed to check on Abby, make sure she was okay. I padded softly down the hallway. The air in the house was colder than before. As I reached the top of the stairs, I froze. He was there. The man in the werewolf mask, crouched on all fours at the bottom of the stairs. His head was tilted at an unnatural angle, staring up at me. His breathing was shallow and raspy, filling the silence of the house. I stood there, unable to move. Only my pulse thudded in my ears. For a moment, neither of us moved. Then, without warning, he let out a low, animalistic growl, like a dog about to pounce. My body reacted before my mind could catch up. I turned and sprinted. I could feel him chasing me, his footsteps heavy and fast, but not like a man running, more like something crawling. I glanced back, and my blood turned to ice. He was coming after me, on all fours, like an animal. His hands and feet scrambled against the stairs, his body twisting unnaturally as he chased me. And the sounds. He was growling, snarling, howling like a wolf. I reached Abby's room just in time, slamming the door shut and locking it. My hands were shaking so badly I could barely dial 911.
Please help me!
I whispered into the phone. My voice was barely audible over his scratching at the door.
There's someone in my house. He's trying to get in.
The operator's calm voice tried to reassure me, but it was drowned out by the banging, the scratching, the low, guttural growls coming from the other side of the door. The door shuddered as he kicked it, again and again, harder each time. I was shivering like a leaf as I pressed my back against the door, holding Abby tightly in my arms, praying for the police to arrive. Then, just as the door was about to give way, I heard it, the distant wail of sirens. The banging stopped, the scratching went silent. When the police arrived, they found the front door broken, the lock mangled by what looked like a metal rod, but the man was gone, disappeared into the night like he'd never been there. They searched the house, checked the neighborhood, but there was no trace of him, no clue as to who he was or what he wanted. And I'll never forget the way he looked at me through the mask, the silent, patient stare, like he was waiting, waiting for me to open the door again. Halloween night at Greenwood always seemed to bring out the best in our neighborhood. Kids running around in costumes, houses decked out in spooky decorations. It was my favorite time of the year. This year, though, Jack Marlowe and his wife Lisa really outdid the rest of us with their haunted house. They were hosting a small get-together, so I was an hour or so early to help out and enjoy the night. Rick Thompson is my name. I'd been good friends and business partners with Jack for all these years, and Lisa was his girlfriend. We shared much, but things had started getting a bit tense between him and Lisa lately. I knew about Lisa's affair with a younger woman named Diane. Not my place, so I tried to keep it lighthearted not to allow the awkwardness to spoil the evening. By and by, the evening wore round. All of us were drinking and laughing, affecting not to notice the deeper undercurrent of tension. 10 p.m., before we knew it, there was a tinkle at the doorbell.
Trick or treat!
Came the muffled voice from the porch. Jack, always being an obliging host, stood up and took the bowl of candy. I get it, he said, going to the door. There was something that did not feel right. I tracked him into the foyer but kept well back, hiding behind the shadows of the hallway. This horrible feeling crept over me that something bad was going to happen. Opening the door, Jack expected trick-or-treaters. Instead, a figure in a grotesque mask stood there, holding a brown paper bag. Before Jack could react, he pulled out a gun and shot him in the face. Jack collapsed instantly, and candy spilled everywhere. I stood frozen in terror, holding my breath as I stared at the scene from the dark hallway. Screaming, Lisa stood by, but there was something strange about her, though it was almost as though she had been waiting for this moment to arrive. The masked intruder entered another step into the house to look for witness. My heart stammered, and I shrunk back into the shadows further.
Help! Someone phone the police!
She finally screamed, breaking out of her trance. Diane sped from the living room, panic etched across her face. She had dashed right into the masked figure. It started to raise the gun once more.
No witnesses.
The figure hissed. My survival instincts kicked in. I turned to run and bumped into a table, sending a glass crashing to the floor. The shattering sound would give me away. The intruder's head jerked in my direction, and I knew it was my turn. I sprinted toward the back door as the killer pounded down behind me. I leapt out into the backyard, clearing a low fence into the next yard over, as the neighbor peered out across his property line, looking irritated. I couldn't breathe but didn't stop as I weaved through the maze of yards. I hit the street and saw a police car parked at the end of the block. I signaled them down, breathless and frantic.
Help! My friend's been shot! The killer's after me!
I gasped, pointing back towards Jack's house. The cops didn't wait. They sped toward the house with me in tow. When we arrived, the house was deathly quiet. Inside, we found Lisa cradling Jack's body, sobbing uncontrollably. Diane was gone, and there was no sign of the masked intruder. I took my statement and elaborated on the masked man who had given me this ride and the horrifying chase to the police. Next, I mentioned Lisa's weird reaction and Diane's disappearance in a flash. The cops assured me that they would investigate all these leads. Days pass, and then finally, with a dare to be potent, the investigation peels off the dark secrets of the Marlowe household. As Lisa and Diane continued to facilitate the romantic affair between them, resentment toward Jack continued to grow. The killing attack was definitely premeditated. It didn't take long before Diane was discovered and, under pressure, confessed to her role in the plot, implicating Lisa and revealing the identity of the masked killer, a hitman hired to get rid of Jack. The murder proved to be a gruesome, horrific crime. The trial that followed gripped Greenwood. It chilled to the bones to hear details about the Halloween murder. Lisa and the killer who she hired got a life sentence in prison. Diane had cooperated with the law and thus was given a lesser sentence, but would never outlive that fateful night. I fought against the pain but gave in to justice. I promised myself to live with the memory of Jack, haunted by the events he witnessed and having his life snatched away from him on an evening that could have been just another innocent night. It is the tale of a Halloween intruder, a legendary reminder of how familiar faces mask impenetrable darkness, and of the hairline thickness of a line separating love from infidelity. And every Halloween, as kids roam the streets in their costumes, I go back to that night and my lost friend. Every Halloween, our street turned into a blur of costumes, laughter, and flashing porch lights. Kids ran from door to door, their candy bags growing heavier by the minute. I loved it. The excitement, the sugar rush, the feeling that we were part of something magical, if only for one night. But there was always one house at the end of the block that no one went near. The old McFadden house. Even during the day, it gave off a creepy vibe. Its paint had long since peeled away, leaving rotten wood exposed. The front yard was overgrown, and no one had seen the McFaddens in years. Some said they'd moved away. Others claimed they were still inside, hiding. The kids had a different theory, that the house swallowed the children whole. My friends and I made a game out of telling stories about the place. Each Halloween, we dared each other to knock on that door. No one ever did, of course, until that year. I was 12, full of bravado and hopped up on too much candy. My best friend Darren double dared me, and in a moment of adrenaline-fueled stupidity, I took the challenge. "I'm gonna do it." They laughed, but I could see a flicker of something else in their eyes. Fear, maybe adoration. Either way, I couldn't back down. As I walked toward the McFadden house, the sounds of the neighborhood seemed to fade. The laughter and music from the other homes became muffled, like I was slipping out of reality and into something darker. The door looked worse up close, splintered and warped, as if something had tried to claw its way out. I reached for the rusted doorknob, and to my surprise, it turned easily. The door creaked open, revealing a long, narrow hallway bathed in dim yellow light. I hesitated. The air inside was thick, stale. Dust motes floated in the weak light, like the house hadn't been disturbed in years. But I'd already come this far. I stepped inside. It didn't look like the house of some crazy old couple. In fact, it looked like someone had been expecting me. There were Halloween decorations, cheap plastic spiders and fake webs hanging from the ceiling. A row of jack-o'-lanterns lined the hallway, their carved faces twisted into sinister grins. But what struck me most were the photographs. They lined the walls, old black and white pictures of kids in Halloween costumes. Some of them looked happy, too happy. Others, there was something wrong with their eyes, hollow, almost vacant. I moved closer, squinting at the nearest photo. The boy was about my age, grinning from ear to ear, but his eyes were dead. And to my horror, I recognized him.
"No way."
It was Tommy Hartwell, the kid who disappeared last Halloween. We'd all heard the stories, but everyone figured he'd just been kidnapped. I stared at the picture, a knot forming in my stomach. That couldn't be right. Tommy was gone. But how could he be here, smiling in a photo that looked decades old? I heard it then, the sound of soft laughter. It echoed from somewhere deeper inside the house, the kind of giggle that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I took a step back, but the door behind me slammed shut with a bang that shook the walls. My heart pounded. I was trapped. I backed away from the door, and as I did, a cold breeze swept through the hallway, flickering the jack-o'-lantern's candles. The shadows stretched, growing long and distorted, and from the corner of my eye, I saw something move.
"Who's there?"
There was no response, just more of that eerie, distant laughter. Then, out of the darkness, a figure emerged. It was Tommy, his clothes torn and dirty, his face twisted. But it wasn't the Tommy I remembered. His skin was pale, almost gray, and his eyes, they were empty, empty black pits staring right through me. Tom? He didn't respond. Instead, he raised a hand and pointed at the far end of the hallway. His voice came out as a rasp, heavy.
You have to help us.
I was frozen. Us? I looked around, and suddenly the faces in the photo seemed to be watching me. The hollow eyes followed my every move. Tommy stepped closer.
If you don't help, you'll become us.
Like you? Tommy nodded. His face contorted with pain. The walls around me seemed to close in. What do I have to do? He pointed at the door at the end of the hallway. It looked just like the one I'd come through, but this one had something carved into it. My name.
No.
I didn't want to go in. Every instinct screamed at me to turn back, to find another way out. But the look in Tommy's eyes, those dark, empty eyes, told me there was no choice. I reached for the doorknob, my hand shaking. As I turned it, the door creaked open, revealing a narrow, dark staircase. I stepped through and the house seemed to sigh. The light behind me disappeared, swallowed by the darkness. I kept walking and walking, and then I was back outside. The house was silent, its windows dark and lifeless. I ran back to my home and told my parents everything. I was shivering. But they just thought I was spooked by Halloween. But the next morning, the street woke to sirens. The McFadden house was ablaze, engulfed in fires reaching five stories high. That is when I saw the look in my parents' eyes, unable to believe, but knowing in their heart that I spoke the truth. The kids who had disappeared over the years, they were never found. And to this day, every Halloween, I wonder, what would have happened if I hadn't opened that door?